Hello, my friends. Good evening. Welcome into the JMAC Live podcast. How are you doing? As usual, let me know where you are listening in from. That helps me know that we're connected to all the streams. And I also love to hear where you are at. So please do that. I've had a good week. I hope you have as well. Tonight is not going to be focused on any current events going on, although if there's something going on that you're interested in, please let me know. I'll be honest with you, I haven't checked my news feed today. I woke up in the morning and I've been working solid ever since then. Normally, I go through a bunch of news feeds throughout the day and haven't seen any news today. Haven't seen any news alerts today. The world could be crumbling down around me, and that's actually very rare because I get the FOMO and my newsfeed starts stacking up. And so I feel like I have to zero it out a couple of times a day and didn't do it today. So I don't even know what's going on in the world. It's a very strange feeling. It's kind of nice, though, in some ways. Is this how the uninformed live? You know, maybe living under a rock is not such a bad thing, you know? Maybe, also, I wanted to respond to this. This is from the replay of the JMAC Live that played yesterday during the day. Richard on Facebook said, "Jay, it's so difficult to look at friends and especially family members the same way who are misguided and believe in the big lie. It's sad and so disappointing. I just can't understand it. These people I thought had principles and good morals." And then he asked me, how do I do it? Well, for me, the solution with family is pretty simple. My family, as far as brothers and sisters, siblings, we're dysfunctional. We don't talk. Occasionally we will text. So honestly, I don't even know if they believe in the big lie. I don't even know if they think COVID was a hoax because we don't chat. So that's a real easy way, Richard, to solve your problems. We're just dysfunctional. And so we don't get in any of those discussions. Bam, boom, makes life easy. Orion, still in Hawaii, Orion? Really? You're killing me. Just killing me. Yes, Orion is in Hawaii, but glad you're joining us, Orion. It's still sunny there in Hawaii right now, isn't it? So if you listened last Tuesday night, I pretty much declared that I'm done with the Republican Party. I sent out a tweet and put up a post at jmcfarland.com. Basically, the title is, "I'm a patriot without a home, why I'm leaving the GOP." I'm now looking for a new home. Anyone? Looking for a new home. Orion says it's sundown. Sundown is about an hour. And with that idea of looking for a new home, I'm looking into the other parties and seeing what's going on. So I had the opportunity earlier today to speak with Jim Bennett. Now, Jim Bennett is running for the mayor of Sandy, and he is also one of the founding members of the United Utah Party. And you, of course, know his father, who served in the Senate for years. And we had a discussion about the current state of politics. We discussed why it is that the political parties do not even try and get things done. They act like they're trying to get things done. But if you want to get things done, if you want to accomplish things, then you have to focus on commonalities. You build from common ground and you work your way outward. That's the way you conduct business deals. That's the way you deal with conflict resolution in the real world. You find the common ground and then you work outwards. And if you go into it wanting to point out differences, then you are clearly demonstrating that you're not interested in getting things done. You're interested in the benefits that come from creating division. That's what the parties peddle in. They peddle in division. They want you to believe that you are different than the American sitting next to you. They want you to believe that those who disagree with you are evil. And if they can do that, then they can manipulate you. And in that manipulation, they can gin you up to whatever they need. Money, votes, whatever it is. They need us divided. They need us separated. The last thing they're going to do is build on commonalities to get things done. And that's why in Congress, the bare minimum ever gets done. They only do the things that they absolutely have to do. And everything else, they want the division, because if they solve the problems, they're not going to have fundraising emails anymore. Think about it. If they solve the issue, then what are they going to run on? So they need the issue to exist. And Jim Bennett talks about that. And so I want you to hear. So first we talk about the current state of our politics. And then I ask him specifically about the United Utah Party. And I thought his insights were really good. As I'm looking for a home, I know many of you are looking for a home. Heather joins us. There's a delay on my text tonight, guys. So my computer's acting up. I've been pushing it too hard. She says, United Utah Party is pretty new, but I've liked what all of their candidates stand for. I do encourage you to go to the United Utah Party website and check it out. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to play for you this interview that I had with Jim Bennett earlier today. Keep your comments coming during the interview, and I'll flash those up during the screen. And then when it's over, I'll come back on live and we can, I would love your thoughts and we can talk about what we discussed.
You know, I left the Republican Party in 2016 and I still believe everything I believed when I was a Republican. Mm-hmm. But the things that I thought mattered to the Republican Party, that mattered to the conservative movement, free markets, free trade, fiscal responsibility, limited government. You know, I get everybody who's really upset that Joe Biden is spending so much money, and I'm right there with them. But I'm thinking, where were you when the previous president was spending more money in 4 years than Barack Obama spent in eight?
Exactly.
And it was the Republican Party that was cheering him on. Mm-hmm. You know, I just look at it and go, it's become so tribal that all that matters is if the guy with your uniform is the one winning the game. It has nothing to do with what that person represents or what the principles are that are driving them. As long as it's our team, it doesn't matter what our team does.
I agree with you, Jim.
I can't go along with that.
No, I agree with you. And I've come to believe it's by design. It's purposeful division. And this is one of the things that became clear to me during the campaign, my campaign for Congress, is that, you know, you send out an email saying, hey, let's all get along and let's work together and get things done. Nobody responds. If they do, they call you a rhino and nobody donates. But if you send out an email saying those evil Democrats, socialists, Marxists, whatever, suddenly the dollars come rolling in. So in many ways, I think we've trained the parties to do this. They gain no political benefit from building on common ground or even getting things done. Their entire power structure is based upon absolute and pure division.
That is correct. That's absolutely right. And getting something done is a sign of weakness.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
My father spent 18 years in the United States Senate, and people were furious with him because he would actually work with people on the other side of the aisle. You know, the Ronald Reagan line that getting 80% of what I want is getting better than 100% of nothing.
That's right.
Nobody seems to believe that anymore on either side. I don't see that in the Democrats or in the Republicans. But right now, it's so deeply frustrating to see Republicans politicizing things that have nothing to do with politics. You know, I don't think public health, public safety should be partisan. I think that, you know, I don't think it's a it should be even remotely controversial that we don't want people to die.
Yeah. Needlessly. Well, it's one of the things I've been saying, Jim, is why can't Republicans, if you want to make the civil liberties argument, that's fine, but you don't have to attack the science to do that. Encourage everybody to mask up. Encourage everybody to get vaccines. Encourage people to follow the CDC. But then make your civil liberties argument as well. They can exist together. And it's like they feel like they have to attack the science to protect the civil liberties. And that just tells me that deep down, they know their argument's pretty weak. That's how I feel about it.
No, I think that's probably true. And even then, I mean, Donald Trump has been vaccinated. Donald Trump has encouraged his supporters to be vaccinated and gotten booed at his rallies when he's done it. But I just keep thinking, so who is it? What is it that you're fighting against? You know, your party leaders, Republican Party leaders, have told you to get vaccinated and you won't do it then either. And I just think, I mean, this is the hill you want to literally die on. I mean, we're not talking figurative. You know, you talk about political hills you want to die on. People are actually dying.
Yes.
And I don't understand it. And I don't, and bringing it up, shaming them, they get angry and they think that it's part of the conspiracy and everything else. And I just throw up my hands and say, what would you like us to do? How can we possibly be helpful? How can we come together? Because I don't want anybody, I don't want another person. I don't care what their politics are. I don't want a single person to die needlessly. And I think everybody should be there. And we don't seem to be.
Yeah, I agree with you. But again, I think it's about back to where the division benefits them personally and politically. And in my opinion, if you are choosing your personal politics over literally people dying, when all you have to do is just change your messaging, you really don't have to change your policies. You don't have to change anything. Just change your messaging and it will save people's lives. And it will return us to a good economy faster. It'll get us back to everything will return faster. And it's what I've come to believe is that the goal is not to get anything done. As I said, the goal is to divide. And what's crazy, Jim, is when you look at any other environment, like a business environment where you need to get things done, you're conducting sales or you're building a relationship. What you do first is you find commonality. And you build on common ground, right? The way that you know that Democrats and Republicans do not want to get anything done is they never discuss commonalities and work from those commonalities. They only focus on differences. That is not an attempt to accomplish anything in Washington. That is an attempt to make sure nothing gets done for political gain, in my opinion.
No, that's absolutely right. And, you know, one of the things my father used to point out, I mean, this is an ancient issue now. It seems almost quaint. Back in the day when people were upset about the National Endowment for the Arts funding dirty art, Senator Jesse Helms would rail on the National Endowment for the Arts. And my father told me there isn't anybody in the world who wants to see the National Endowment for the Arts survive more than Jesse Helms. And I said, that's a strange thing to say. I listened to him. He hates it. Mm-hmm. No, he doesn't. He loves it because it allows him to raise money and allows him to create division that helps him. You know, and I thought, boy, that's an awfully cynical way to look at things. And yet I look at Washington and we've all... people on both sides have decided that that's the way to do things, is constantly stoking division,
yes,
constantly stoking, unrest and everything else is what feeds both parties.
That's right. 100%.
And it's deeply disturbing and it's deeply frustrating and it needs to stop.
Well, it's not just disturbing. I believe I'm to the point now where I believe it's going to end us. It's going to end our republic because now it's led to a belief that you can't trust elections. We have a march on the Capitol, an insurrection. Everywhere I go, I hear the word civil war. We're talking about the end of this great experiment. And I believe it's directly because of what you're talking about. George Washington warned us about it in his farewell address. He predicted that all of this would happen. He even predicted Donald J. Trump. I don't know if you've seen this quote. I'd love to share it with you. This is one of my favorite quotes from George Washington's farewell address. It says, "The disorders and miseries which gradually result incline the minds of men to seek security and repose in the absolute power of an individual, and sooner or later the chief of some prevailing faction, more able or more fortunate than his competitors, turns this disposition to the purpose of his own elevation on the ruins of public liberty." He predicted Donald J. Trump, and the man destroying public liberty by destroying people's faith in an electoral process without evidence for his own political gain. And what's crazy is the people are rallying behind it. And I believe we are on the direct path now, Jim, to the end of our nation if we continue down this line of political division that we are following.
I want to be more optimistic than that.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe even without evidence to be more optimistic than that. But, you know, it's been interesting because, you know, as I'm running to be mayor of Sandy City, it's a nonpartisan race. And there are so many people who just ask, I just want to know who you voted for president. I don't want to know anything else.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear anything. And I get very frustrated with that because I just think that's such a lazy way to look at it. But I've had conversations with people about January 6th who say, when I say I was just appalled at what happened on January 6th, oh, then you're throwing in with the Democrats. I thought, really? So you're happy with what happened on January 6th?
Yeah.
So the fact that you are frustrated or they throw out the difficulties and the riots that happened as if to say, okay, isn't it possible to say that riots are bad regardless of who starts them? So, I mean, if you're going to point at riots in Portland and say, I don't like those riots, you should also point at January 6th and say, I don't like riots in the nation's capital either.
Yes, it's that would be consistent. That's right.
You know, I worked on Capitol Hill. I worked for Senator Alan Simpson of Wyoming. And, you know, my father worked on Capitol Hill. I know the hallways of the Capitol like the back of my hand. I used to have to give tours of the Capitol to constituents of Wyoming. And it felt like somebody was breaking into my home as I saw them trashing.
Yeah.
You know, I knew the pictures. I knew all of those places. I know all of those halls. And I thought, this is the home of democracy. This is, you know, and to have Confederate flags being carted through there and people dressed up like Vikings and idiots. I mean, it was just
all based on a lie, all based on a lie, and all based on a belief that they were the ones being the patriots, right? They were the ones honoring the Constitution. That's what's so mind-blowing in all of that.
No, it's it's reached a point where you can't have a rational discussion about it. I mean, if we can't acknowledge that was a bad thing, then how do you, it's like trying to have a discussion with somebody about astronomy and the other person believes the sky is green.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't start and accept a common set of facts and we both acknowledge that the sky is blue, there's no use having a further discussion. And we've got an increasing number of people in this country that refuse to acknowledge base reality. We're not just talking about partisan differences anymore. We're talking about people that are divorced from reality increasingly. And you're right. If we don't find some way to not come together necessarily in terms of agreeing, you know, on politics, but just come together on agreeing on what reality is. You don't have to like Joe Biden to agree that he won the election.
That's right.
You don't have to like anything the Democrats are doing to agree that you should probably get vaccinated because there's a virus that doesn't care what your politics are and is going to kill you. If you know,
right.
I mean, just that base level of reality, then we can get back to fighting over policy differences.
Yeah. But I've come to believe that it's by design. We've been taught and told that you can't trust the media. You can't trust authority. And the only ones that you can trust are those who are seeking your vote, right? On the one side. And that's by design so that you can be manipulated. Because once they've convinced you that they are the fountain of truth and nobody right. else is, then they can steer you in any direction that they want. And so, again, I think it's by design. And I think that the people who are falling into this trap, they are getting played. And it's sad because, you know what? They're really good people. And that's one of the things that I hate is when people who go after Trump supporters or people who believe in the big lie, and what they want to do is attack their intelligence and go after this or go after that. In all discussions and divisions of opinion, we have to recognize that these are good people, right? And approach them from that framework. I think it's the only way we have a chance to change any hearts and minds, because the minute anyone goes to attacks, it's over, right? It's over. So, you know, that to me is part of the issue, how we approach and think about those people that have been manipulated and that have come to this conclusion.
Yeah, I think there's some truth in that. You know, I grew up, I think we're probably roughly the same age, but I grew up in an environment where there was a really monolithic sort of approach in the media. You know, it was the New York Times, it was ABC, NBC, CBS, and I remember Rush Limbaugh being such a breath of fresh air because yes. it was, here's somebody who's giving you a different point of view.
Yes.
And he kept talking about how he had broken the media monopoly, and I thought that was a great thing. But what's happened now is that we've gone so far in the other direction, right? It used to be that it was impossible not to hear just sort of the mainstream point of view as a monolithic thing. Now it's possible to silo yourself
yes.
from any information you don't want to hear. You know, the internet and everything has given you so many choices that now it is possible to insulate yourself from any kind of voice that you disagree with. And there are so many people. And again, I think I don't think the left is immune to this either.
No, of course not. And in fact, social media plays into it, right? Social media. They only want to feed you what you want to hear and see.
What you want to hear.
That's right.
There are people on both sides or wherever they are who live in this constant echo chamber.
Yes.
And so the very idea that anybody outside of that echo chamber could be telling you something that you need to hear.
No, you just block it. You just block it.
It's just not there.
That's right.
And so the voices that are trying to tell people to get vaccinated, the voices, you know, These are the enemy. These are the zombies trying to break down the wall that you've put up as you are the last person on Earth.
Yeah. But you also, you pointed it out, like you talked about how if the riots in Portland are bad, then the riot in D.C. was bad. I grew up like right. you did. I got into talk radio because of Rush Limbaugh. I never had a political thought before Rush Limbaugh. I grew up believing that there was a left-leaning slant in the media. I still believe that there is a left-leaning slant in the majority of the media, not one that is programmed from the top, but that's, you grow up in the college system, you want to be a journalist. I just think that that's kind of the natural path, right?
It's just sort of groupthink, yeah.
That's right. So then if I'm upset at a left-leaning media because I believe that they're supposed to be objective, then when a right-leaning media comes out, I should be equally concerned and frustrated with that, right? But first I have to see that it's right-leaning, right? And I may not see that. But so when people talk about slant in the media, I'm like, if you were upset at the left, and the left-leaning media, you certainly should be upset at the right-leaning media if you're going to be consistent in your viewpoint and their thinking. And, right. and it's one of the things that we do, Jim, in our society. We point out the evils and the wrongs of the other side. But then when our side does it, we either say, well, they did it first. And right. I'm like, but you were angry when they did it. You didn't right. like it. Right. Do you forget that part? You were upset. You railed against it. Now your side is doing it. And instead of railing against it too, you're embracing it. That's what's right. happening in people's minds. And they don't see it happening.
Well, and it's no longer, it's not about ideas. It's about tribes.
Yes, of course.
It's 100% tribalism. I mean, because I can remember being angry, frustrated. I mean, I grew up in sort of a political environment.
Yes, you did.
My father didn't get elected to the Senate until I was in my 20s. But, but at the same time, politics was a very important part of our family and a part of our conversations. And I think I was probably better informed than most people my age growing up. But my frustrations with the media weren't, oh, I think Dan Rather is an evil person who's out to get me. It's, why can't Dan Rather see that this kind of spending is going to drive us to ruin? You know,
yes.
it was policy-based.
Yes.
It was not such raw tribal rage.
Yes.
That everybody in the media, I just thought everybody in the media was wrong. I didn't think they were out to get me or to drink my blood.
Or that they were evil, right? And that's what we're being taught. The
and that's
opposition
where we are
is
now.
Evil. Yes.
Now we have reached a point. So, when my father lost in 2010, he lost in convention to Mike Lee. I liked a post on social media by Sam Granato, who was the Democrat in the race. And within minutes, I got a phone call from the Granato campaign and said, we saw you liked our social media post. Would you come talk to us? And I went, sure. I'll talk to anybody. And I went and talked to them. And I said, well, you know, based on what you're saying, I'd probably rather you were the senator than Mike Lee. And Sam Granato said to me, great, will you come work for me? And I said, well, you know, I think that would embarrass my father. I'm a Republican.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, oh, we don't need to tell anybody. Which was a really stupid thing to say, because about a week later, I got a phone call from the Salt Lake Tribune. We know you're working for the Granato campaign.
Yes.
Would you like us to run a story with or without a comment
yes.
from you?
Yes.
And I ended up getting more press than Sam did in that race. That a Bennett was now, the Deseret News had a front page article that said Bennett backs Blue.
Mm.
And it was, it, but that was such an eye opener for me, because I had spent so many years in the trenches working in professional Republican politics. And when you're working in a campaign, the other side is evil. You know, you have to
That's
get
right.
up sort of in the morning and you're just kind of, what can I do to mess these mm-hmm. guys up today?
Mm-hmm.
And here I am working with all of these Democrats, having never been a Democrat, and one, you know, hey, everybody here, you guys are pretty decent guys. We don't agree on everything, but you seem like, you know, and it was just this huge eye opener that so much of that division is just comes from this kind of natural tribal thing. And it's not rational.
Mm-mm.
It's not rooted in principle.
Mm-mm.
It's just, I want the other side to lose. It's the University of Utah versus BYU.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
It's just, I want my team to win.
That's
because
right.
Because that's kind of how we're programmed. That's kind of how we are.
Yeah. And you
but
both see a call from a ref and the one side sees it one way and the other side sees it completely different. It affects literally the way they see things with their own eyes.
Right. Right. And you know, I mean, it's not as if partisanship and tribalism are brand new.
No.
It's not as if this wasn't always there. It's not as if we're trying to return to some kind of golden age where this didn't exist. But the difference now is that we are divorced from reality in a
yes.
way we never have been before.
Yeah. And I do think it has reached a level of hatred. And,
yeah.
You know, because we have been told for years it is a battle of good versus evil. It is not a battle of ideas. It's a battle of good versus evil. And so when you negotiate with the enemy and give ground to the enemy, that's a terrible thing to do, and you should never do that. That's part of the manipulation. This isn't just two ideas competing, which is what the Constitution gave us the ability to right. do, have all viewpoints represented and send their people to Congress and debate. That's the beauty of the Constitution. Now people believe that that's a terrible thing and that there's only one way to run government and that that way should be forced upon all the people. What's funny is so many of those people, Jim, will say they believe the Constitution was inspired. And I'm like, if you believe there's only one way to run government, then why wouldn't God have inspired that version of government instead of this Constitution that we have?
No, that's exactly right. The Constitution is inefficient by design.
Mm-hmm.
Inefficiency is built into the system because things are not supposed to happen unless we can create a clear national consensus for them.
That is correct.
The goal of the Constitution was not efficiency. Efficiency would be a dictator.
That's right.
The dictators are extraordinarily efficient.
That's right. The Constitution, and it wasn't to force a particular style of government on the people, meaning liberal or conservative.
Well, no. I mean, you talk about the referees. Mm-hmm. You know, when people start waving the Constitution and say the answers are all in the Constitution, it's like, no, the Constitution sets the rules of the game. The Constitution says this is how big the playing field is. Mm-hmm. This is how long the terms are. You know, you serve for 4 years if you're president. You serve for 6 years in the Senate. It sets the boundaries for the game. And then it says, all right, how you play that game is up to you. It is not a proscriptive document or a prescriptive document. It doesn't provide the prescription of what government is supposed to do so much as provide the boundaries for how government can do it.
And that's the beauty of it. It's
absolutely
beautiful because then the people get to decide through this process of debate and passing laws and elections. That way we're not running our government today the way it was prescribed 200 years ago after so much of change. It's beautiful. But you have to make room for disagreement in order for it to work.
No, of course you do. And I mean, that's what that is the Constitution's inspiration. It's inefficiency.
Yes.
Is the inspiration. It's that everybody gets to have a say. Everybody gets to participate. Everybody gets to be in the arena.
Yes.
And shutting that down and undermining the underpinnings of it. I mean, it's so disheartening to see people now believe that there isn't that elections are always suspect if my side doesn't win.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We can't function that way.
No.
You know, the other side's going to win and my side's going to win. But if we've undermined all faith in the integrity of elections, it doesn't matter anymore.
That's right.
Because the whole system. The whole system, it's like playing football and saying, well, I don't think your touchdown counts. And it's like, well, then you don't have a game.
That's right.
Then this doesn't work. Let's all go home.
That's right. Because our nation, people forget, it's really we survive because of voluntary compliance, right? I mean, the whole reason that one president leaves the White House and another does, it's because we all trust the system and we all follow it. Because we believe it works. If suddenly a large portion of us don't believe it works anymore because of election lies or whatever else, then that voluntary compliance goes away and then the system falls apart.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're in real danger of that.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. And that's my fear. I've got a lot of people. I was doing a podcast the other night and so many people are like you in many ways. They're still consider themselves conservatives, don't feel that they have a home in the Republican Party because they feel the party has left them and they're looking for a new home. And so we were just kind of speaking out loud and talking about, you know, what is that new home? Is it as independents? Is it a new party? And several people asked about the United Utah Party. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to reach out to you, both for your political experience, but also so we could tell people about the United Utah Party and what are your thoughts about where they should go? Is it a home that they should consider?
It's become my home. So in 2017, I was approached by Richard Davis, who is he was the former chairman of the Utah County Democratic Party. And he just retired, but he was a political science professor at Brigham Young University. And he said, it's time for a new party. And he says, mm-hmm. I'm a former Democrat. I had already left the Republican Party, but I was just unaffiliated. I hadn't joined any other party, and I'd never been a Democrat. And he says, you're a former Republican, I'm a former Democrat. Let's get together and see if we can't create something. And one of the things that I find very compelling about the United Utah Party is that the United Utah Party has a single page for a platform.
Yes.
The principles outlined in the United Utah Party are very simple, very straightforward. Most of them are focused on things like term limits and other sort of governmental reforms. But some people go, well, what's your stand on all of these issues? And the answer is, this is a party where people who disagree about things are welcome, where people can come together. Mm-hmm. We talk about it as a centrist party, as a moderate party. I have come to see it more as a non-ideological party. Mm. That this is a party where people who disagree about things, but are not comfortable with the extremes that both of the other parties have gone to, can find a home to work to try to find solid common sense solutions that shouldn't have ideological baggage attached to them. You know, the idea of term limits is one that both Republicans and Democrats have flirted with over the years, and they go back and forth on it. But I look at the Republican Party and I look at, you know, if the Republican Party stands for anything, it's free markets and free trade. And they were hardcore free traders until 2016 when Donald Trump hates free trade. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, you know, we've always been at war with Oceania. You know,
yeah.
We've always hated free trade. It's like, yeah. No, you haven't.
No.
I mean, So the United Utah Party, I think, is a great place where people can start to work to actually build a common sense consensus on issues where you're not sort of focused on the tribal baggage. You're focused on the issues. And I found it to be a very refreshing place to be. It also allows me to vote for Republicans and vote for Democrats in general elections, we have an increasing number of people who are running I'm running in a nonpartisan race. You know, I'm not focused as a candidate from the United Utah
right.
Party, although I am
right.
still a member of the party. But, people are running in legislative races and they're running in county commission races. And what's interesting is I've had conversations with people talking about third parties. Third-party movements historically have come from the top down. It's been, I'm Ross Perot, and I'm a third party.
Right.
I'm running, and I'm going to create my own party to run. And Ross Perot got a third of the vote or less than that in 1992, started the Reform Party in 1996. They ran another candidate in 2000, and then they've disappeared. They don't exist anymore. And the difference in talking to Richard, people keep saying, and it's the United Utah Party. Don't you want to be a national party? And the answer is, yes, we do. But we start from the ground up. You know, we start by winning local races. And we start by demonstrating that we're not just some kind of vanity project from a billionaire running for president. We are a grassroots movement from the ground up. And we win local elections, we win smaller elections, and we build the groundwork for people to see what this looks like. And once you have a United Utah Party that is a viable force in Utah politics, it becomes a lot easier to have the United California Party and the United Alabama Party and the United, you know, pick your state, until eventually you have the United Party all the way around. But that's the way this movement is going. And it's been really interesting because we're not going anywhere. We get more and more candidates and we keep getting an increasing number of the percentage of the votes. And in Utah, it's interesting because Utah is not a viable two-party system. In Utah, if you're not a Republican, the last Democrat to win a statewide race in Utah was Jan Graham in 1992. I think she won re-election in 1996. So she's the last, she was the attorney general who was a Democrat, and a lot of people assume she was a Republican. My grandfather, Wallace Bennett, was the first Republican to win statewide office in 20 years when he won the United States Senate in 1950. I mean, the tribal loyalties have shifted in Utah. Utah used to be a Democratic state. Now it's a Republican state. But we've reached a point where the Democratic Party, to a large degree, just isn't competitive.
That's right.
And instead of offering up sort of centrist, moderate Democrats, they've said, well, if we're going to lose, we're going to lose on principle. And they offer up these wild-eyed left-wing loons, you know. And I go, you know, if I'm frustrated with the Republican Party, where am I going to go? Because that's right. Not where I want to go.
That's right.
I'm not a Democrat. And so the United Utah Party has the opportunity to reach out to that disaffected middle and say, there is a place for you. Because if you go by raw numbers, the Republican Party isn't the biggest party in the state. The biggest party is unaffiliated.
That's right.
And these are people, most of them vote Republican, but they can't bring themselves to actually sign on the dotted line to be Republicans. And I think there is a hunger for a reasonable center that does not have a voice. And the United Utah Party is growing. And, you know, and it's interesting. If you look at our numbers in terms of how many members we have in the party, we punch way above our weight. Because one of the things that I found is a lot of people are reluctant to leave officially the party, the Republican Party, because so much of the action takes place in the Republican primary. The Republicans have closed their primaries. And so in order to have, when you were running, your race was in the Republican primary.
That's right.
More than it was in the general election. Once Republicans get to a general election, usually it's
already decided.
Deal.
Yeah.
It's already decided. So a lot of people won't change their registration. But when it comes to actually voting percentages, we had our first statewide candidate this last election for state auditor, and he didn't have a lot of money, he didn't have a lot of name recognition, but he got close to 20% of the vote. And it was just people saying, I want to vote for something other than a Republican or a Democrat.
Right.
You know, what happens when you have United Utah Party members who are well-funded and who are well-known? When I ran as the first candidate for the United Utah Party. I ran for Congress in 2017, and I got 9.4% of the vote, and I spent less than $20,000. Mm. You know, John Curtis spent $1 million. But I got close to 10. At the time, I was the most successful third-party congressional candidate in Utah history. I can no longer say that because Eric Ellison ran in the first district the next cycle for the United Utah Party and got close to 12% of the vote. You know, so you're seeing, I think, a hunger out there for another alternative. And I think the United Utah Party is doing it right. We're, you know, it's not, after every election, they turn around and they say, well, are you done? Great. Mm. It's like, no, we're not done. We're still here. And, you know, in the first election we ran, we only ran one candidate, me. And then the next election, we ran 18 candidates. And then the next election, we ran 44 candidates. You know, we had more candidates on the ballot than any other party other than the Republican Democrats combined. All of the other smaller parties, we had more candidates on the ballot than all of those parties combined. And we're going to start winning elections. And once we start winning elections, people are going to start to notice and go, maybe I need to give this another look.
Yeah, and I think that's an important part of the process to be considered viable. They're going to want to know you can win, but it's a catch-22. In order to win, they need to come on board. So what would you say, because I've heard this, people say, I don't want to support a third-party candidate because that's just going to put a Democrat in office. It'll split the vote of the right. And I'll be honest with you, it's one of the reasons why initially I thought I'll fight for change within the Republican Party. Because right. if I ran as an independent, I felt like I had enough name recognition to where I would have just guaranteed the seat for Ben McAdams. And that would defeat my goal, right? Because I still want conservatism to win. I just right. need changes to happen in the Republican Party.
Well, you were in a race where probably the only race, high profile race, where a Democrat was competitive.
That's right.
You know, you're looking at 2022, you're looking at Mike Lee. A United Utah Party candidate is not going to split a vote between Mike Lee and whoever the Democrats throw up as their sacrificial mm-hmm. lamb. Mm-hmm. I had people say that to me all the time when I ran as United Utah Party candidate. It was, you know, well, this one guy actually, there was a debate in Moab. He came up to me afterward and said, "You were the best one up there. I just wish you had a chance." Mm-hmm. I went, "Well, I do have a chance if you'll vote for me."
If you vote for me, but, that's right.
But no, I can't vote for you because it's throwing my vote away and all that. That's another argument too for the fact that doing this on a local level long term has the potential to be more effective than doing this on a presidential level.
Yes,
because that calculus, you always have a competitive two-party race on the presidential level with very, very few exceptions. That's Bob Dole in 1996 maybe probably wasn't particularly competitive. But, you know, in just about every race, it's always competitive. But in Utah, there are races where a Democrat doesn't even show up, where Republicans run unopposed.
That's
the Democratic
right.
Party is so demoralized and so that it's just not an option. And so the idea that you're going to split the vote between two equally competitive parties just doesn't bear up when you look at what the reality of what the system is in Utah.
Yeah.
Joe Cannon, who ran against my father in the Republican primary in 92, went on to be the chair of the Republican Party. And he told my father at one point, he says, "There are three parties in Utah and I'm in charge of two of them." You know, the divisions in the Republican Party are more important than the divisions between Republicans and Democrats
right.
because the Democrats
in
just
Utah.
Aren't competitive.
Right.
And right now, the Republican Party, I mean, you've got huge divisions within the Republican Party. Mitt Romney, I mean, everybody, the Republicans screaming about how terrible Mitt Romney is. If you look at Mitt Romney's polling numbers, he is the most popular statewide elected official in the state. But his popularity comes from outside the party. It comes
yes.
from independents and it
That's
comes
right.
from Democrats.
That's right.
But within the Republican Party, Mitt Romney is a rhino and he's terrible.
That's
and
right.
worst and all of that. So you don't have a healthy two-party system that you are disrupting as a member of the United Utah Party. You have a dysfunctional and divided Republican Party, and you have an ineffective and ineffectual Democratic Party. And there is a need for a competitive second party outside of the Republican Party. And the United Utah Party can fill that gap and fill that need.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And you talked about District 4 being competitive then. I'm pretty sure with redistricting, based upon the numbers that I've seen so far, that's probably going to go away in the 4th as well.
I think you're right. And I also think Ben McAdams anywhere but Utah would have been a Republican.
Yes. That's very true.
And the Democrats hated him for that.
Yeah.
I don't think whoever the Democrats nominate next time around to run against Burgess Owens is going to be anywhere. The Democrats aren't going to be able to help themselves and are going to nominate somebody that is going to get 20% of the vote if they're mm-hmm. lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ben McAdams it really was masterful at sort of trying to navigate that kind of partisan thing. When we talked to him, he's like, "You belong in the United Utah Party. you know, you don't belong in the Democratic Party. Right. And the Democrats keep telling him you don't belong in the Democratic Party. I don't think Ben is going to run again. So I think with congressional redistricting and everything else, you're going to see Republicans doing everything they can to maintain their monopoly.
Well, and I also think just by sheer numbers, most of the growth has happened in northern Utah County, and so in the 4th District. So I just see naturally that district is going to become more conservative. So because those blue districts are not experiencing growth, so
right, that's
you
true.
Know. They're going to lose out because of that. So even if we don't bring up the gerrymandering word or anything like that,
right.
It's hard for me to see that district not becoming more conservative.
Yeah, I do not see a way forward for a viable Democratic Party to emerge in the state of Utah.
Yeah.
You know, I left the Republican Party in 2016 and...
So there you go. Fascinating interview with Jim Bennett, and I want to thank him for spending so much time with me earlier today. I thought he made a lot of great points. You can tell him and I connected on a lot of things as well. Still considering the viability of a third party. And I know a lot of you are as well, as I read your comments. But he makes a good point. We really don't have a two-party system here in Utah. And he also brings out the point that the majority of the people are unaffiliated. So is there an opening there? There might be, especially with everything that's going on in the Republican Party. So some of your comments that came in, let me scroll back up here. This is David. He says, I'm at United Utah currently. I'm still getting a feel for it. I'm still getting a feel for if it will be my long time home. David, thank you for chiming in. Orion joining us from Hawaii says, parties being partisan isn't surprising, but getting people interested in a third party is a bit of a stretch. Americans are black and white. They see only left and right. There is also the aspect of gamesmanship. People psychologically want to pick a winner or are less apt to pick a third party not thinking they will win. Once again, I think that's a function of the way it's been in the past. As just like the number one, the largest group of people in Utah are unaffiliated, it is also true that the largest political group nationally are independents. And I feel that they, because of the ingrained two-party system, I don't think they're choosing the two-party system, Orion, because they love black and white and they love all of this stuff. The gamesmanship is happening by the parties. It's not happening by the independents and the unaffiliated, the largest group. I believe what's happening in that group is they're not given any other choices. They have to participate in what the Republicans and the Democrats are doing. So they're doing so holding their nose, not with excitement, not with overjoy, being overjoyed. They're doing it because nobody else is presenting them with a viable course forward. Of course, then, as we talked about, it's a catch-22. If they feel, even if they want to support it, that a third party is a wasted vote, then I agree with you in that respect, Orion. It's going to be hard to pull that person in. And that's the real difficulty, I believe. Not that you can't get them to agree with you and support you, or that they're so tied into both parties. You look at nationally, people are leaving the parties. The parties are shrinking. And people are looking for something else. And a lot of them are just checking out. They're just done with it. They're tired of it. So I see potentially an opportunity there. I'm not sure, but I'm willing to look at it. David says what a lot of people are thinking. It's a tough decision. On the one hand, I don't feel represented by the majority of the Republican Party. On the other hand, I still want to be able to support principled Republicans that are trying to revive the party by voting for them in primaries. It makes leaving the Republican Party difficult for me. Well, and that, I guess in that case, you could remain registered as a Republican. You can participate in the Republican primaries. But then when it comes to the general election, vote principle instead of party. I think that's a viable course as well. I think a lot of people will say, you know, I'm frustrated with the national party, but I'm not that frustrated with the local party. And we have some good Republican leaders in this state. And I agree with that. The core of my frustration does not come from the Utah part of the Republican Party. The core of my frustration comes from the national party. There are certain individuals in the local party that are pissing me off right now to the point of where I feel like I have to get back in the game. I have to try. And that's Chris Stewart and Burgess Owens. More Chris Stewart than Burgess Owens. And who would have ever thought that was the case? You know, Burgess is choosing these social issues, not Utah issues. I don't know what he's done for Utah. He wants to be, you know, talking about, you know, saluting the flag and the anthem and Britney Spears and all of those things, like be a social justice warrior. I don't know what he's doing for the state of Utah, but Chris Stewart and his recent statements on COVID and the CDC and now the big lie, I believe his actions are killing people and killing this country. But in general, I really like Spencer Cox as our governor. You know, I took issue with his statement on masks, but I think they've recovered from that, and I think their messaging is right on. And we have a lot of great representation in the state of Utah from good Republicans. And that's the other thing I want to make clear. And one of the things that makes this so difficult for me personally is that, you know, all of the individual Republicans that I know, they're fantastic people. And they don't like what's going on, but they don't feel that they have a hope. Even the people who do subscribe to it in all other aspects of life, they're just great people. So I don't want anyone to ever construe my frustration with the Republican Party as being a frustration with all Republican individuals. It's not the case. So again, David, these are just some of the things that, you know, just some of the emotions that I'm going through. David says, man, my comments are really slow on the screen tonight. I should have rebooted before I went on. David says, I've gone back and forth on this too. I have thought about registering Republican again so I can run to be a delegate at the next caucus, fully expecting to lose, but at least with an opportunity to call for change. Look, anybody out there who wants to continue to fight for change within the Republican Party, I support you. I understand why that is your choice and your decision. I'm beyond it because the party that I love and that I thought was principled has shown me that they want power over principles. And it's frightening. It's frightening to me the lengths that they are now willing to go. The party could keep all of its same platforms, because I support most of its platforms. I just wish that it was demanding evidence of election fraud. And if it's not getting it, then I wish it was saying, we got to stop that. We don't support that. But they're afraid of Donald Trump. They're afraid of his popularity. So they're put in a place where to keep their jobs, they have to either be silent about election fraud or they have to do what Chris Stewart is doing, downplay, deflect. And the problem with that is you're literally choosing your job, your political career, over the nation. You know, I don't say that when you're fighting for a tax cut or fighting against a social program. I don't think any of those things are the death of a nation. We can come back from all of those things. That's the beauty of our country. Another side can could come back into power and can create change. But I do say it when your actions, when your desire to stay in office are leading you down a path where people have lost their faith in our electoral system with no cause. An election that President Trump's own DOJ said was the most secure in history. And they went looking for things to back up his claims. And then the same goes for COVID. It's one thing when it's about a tax cut and you get in your political wrangling and those kind of things. Man, if I could just get a Republican Party that wanted evidence of election fraud and that supported the science and didn't downplay COVID, I wouldn't be going anywhere. I understand the partisanship, Orion. I understand that partisanship has existed forever. We're talking about the life of our nation and the life of individual citizens now. That's what they're playing politics with now. That's the political calculation, is if I want to keep my job, I can't encourage people to get vaccinated. I can't encourage them to wear a mask. I can't say that an election is secure until you prove it isn't. Think about how absurd that is. So, to me, I'll use the word again, it's evil. If you are choosing your political career over people's faith in a sound election system, and if you're choosing your political career over the lives of people who are going to rush out and take ivermectin or put iodine drops in their eyes over getting a vaccine that has been tested and as Jim Bennett pointed out, taken by the president of the United States, Donald Trump. Of course, he couldn't tell anybody when he did it. Un-freaking-believable. If you're making those political calculations, that is evil, because people are dying and our nation is dying as a result of that. So this goes way far beyond partisanship as usual. I could stomach everything else. I could survive everything else. I can't survive that. This is Invertex on Twitch says, is this a leftist stream? It's always interesting to me that the first thing you want to do is put a label on it. Because if you can label it, then you can just dismiss it. And of course, if you saw my response, I said, no, it's a principled stream. We put principle over party here. Call them like we see them. Some days left and some days right. But amidst, if you can just label, oh, leftist stream, don't have to hear what he has to say. Oh, right-wing stream, don't have to hear what they have to say. Put a label on it and you'll never be challenged. Pretty simple. Let's see. David says, Michelle Weeks was United Utah, right? I thought she was fantastic in Draper, but Mayor Troy Walker was not willing to work with anybody that didn't have their lips glued to his. What is that? This is Manuel on YouTube says, I absolutely cannot support Stuart Owens or especially Lee. I like Herbert and Cox. Yeah, so again, my frustration, and that's, you know, people have asked me, you know, they've said, you know, why don't you run in a local campaign? Why don't you run for state senate or, you know, state house of representatives or mayor or something like that? And that's not where the problem is. That's not where my issue is. And that's exactly why. You know, I think that we have people who are handling those things fairly well. That's not my issue. My issue is with the National Republican Party, who is refusing to stand for what is right. And because of it, people are dying and our nation is dying. That's my issue. So if I do anything, it's going to be to try and create change at that level. Now, a lot of people would say, well, maybe, you know, run local and then later on try and do something later. I don't know if there's time. I don't know if there's time. We just saw a march on the Capitol. I don't know if there is time. I want you to think about a possible outcome here and what will happen. If Donald J. Trump decides to run again and he loses, that could be the tipping point. Because if he loses, he's going to continue to make the same election fraud claims. And that could be enough to do it. I really believe that. If I didn't believe it, I'd just try and wash my hands of all of it. But that's we are in a train without a conductor right now heading down that path. I don't know if there is time to say, well, I'll put together a 10-year plan. I think I may need to go down kicking and screaming sooner than that. That's just my perspective of where I'm at. I have to try and take the following and the name recognition and the things that I have and this group of people that we've put together and say, can we stop it before we hit the end of the tracks? David says, my brother-in-law believed in using ivermectin. He spent 3 weeks in hospital with a ventilator. His funeral is Monday. Oh, David, it's heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking. I'm just curious. You know, every pandemic, there's always been anti-vaxxers. There's always been... you know, during pandemics, there's always been anti-authority and those types of people. But I'm really curious if your brother would be alive if Donald Trump, from the very beginning, didn't downplay, if he didn't say that the virus would go away without a vaccine, if he didn't contradict, if he didn't bring up bleach, if when Operation Warp Speed went through, he touted it from the highest mountains. When he got the vaccine, he shared that with everybody. After his loss, he goes on the Make America Healthy tour, touting the vaccine. The Republican Party, backed up by his leadership and his strength, have no problem propping up the vaccine because Trump is behind them and it's not going to affect them politically. I don't know, David, would your brother still be alive? Maybe not your brother, but I believe a lot more people would be alive today. I believe a lot more people would be vaccinated. We might not have the variants floating around that we have. We might have returned to our jobs and our workplaces sooner. And we might be more united because we had a president in that moment who sought to unify us against a common enemy. That's just my thought process. I think more people would be alive. I do think that the actions of so many in the Republican Party are causing people to risk their lives. And that's horrific. If you're doing it for political gain, it's horrific. It's evil. It's evil. Let's see. Manuel asks a question here. Man, my system is slow tonight. Jay, what do you think about removing all the R&D letters from the ballots? There are a lot of mindless straight ticket voters in the state. At least we could filter those votes, thoughts. Manuel, I get a lot of people who suggest these kind of things to me. I don't think that they change anything. I really don't. They may change things down ballot, you know, where people doesn't, they don't know who these people are because they're, you know, they're small areas. They're, you know, for House seats and Senate seats for the United States, for not for the United States, but for the state Senate. But everybody's going to know the party of those people. So I see it as a gesture that really doesn't have an impact. As long as we continue to bestow the power that we do on the two parties, I don't think it makes a difference. You could say, you know, straight ticket voting, does that, you know, does that cause a problem? You know, people don't want straight ticket voting where you just click one box that says all Democrats or all Republicans. Well, you've inconvenienced me. Now I have to go down the ballot and look for all the R's, but you know, you caused me to take an extra 5 minutes. These types of measures, to me, do not have an impact as long as we continue to be addicted to the two-party system. We have to choose different. We really do. And we have to stop giving them the power that they have. And it's kind of like the movie Ants. Remember the movie Ants where they were being run by, was it wasps? Was it grasshoppers? Who was really, I don't remember. The ants, one of you will text me and tell me. So the ants were being ruled until the day that the ants realized that they outnumbered their rulers like 10,000 to one. And that was the day things changed. We have to help all the disenfranchised and the unaffiliated and the independents and the moderates. We have to help them know and understand that they outnumber the extremes. This is the reality of the two parties. They want to gin you up into so much anger and so much fear and so much hatred so that you continue to seek repose in what they're offering. So that you'll always be distracted from the fact that the vast majority of us are much closer to the center. We're frustrated with the extremes. Somebody, oh, it's a bug's life. Yep, that's what I meant. What did I say? So it's a bug's life. You're exactly right, David. Oh, I said ants, didn't I? You're right. It's a bug's life. They don't want you to realize that the largest political group is right in the middle. It's just sitting there. And man, if we could get somebody to activate that, the parties would be forced to turn around and to cater to the citizens again, or they would fade away, one or the other. David says, they keep talking about Trump's base, but I'd like to think that there are many people who voted for him but who are not really Trump supporters. We know that that's true. The polling tells us that's true. And as I pointed out, the majority are in the middle, and they're participating in the process on the left or the right, not because they're excited about it, but because that's the only choice they're given. Can we find a way to get them another choice? David says, I've wondered if just getting one state to vote third party in a presidential election would lead to others believing and following suit the next election. Thoughts? Yeah. This is what we fail to really recognize, David, is that in our addiction to the two parties, we make ourselves irrelevant. And that's why gerrymandering works. You know, people are so frustrated with gerrymandering. Well, gerrymandering is just knowing how people are going to vote and drawing the district based upon how they're going to vote. So what that means is they know that regardless of what candidate they put up, we're going to choose that candidate because of the R or the D. So that type of signaling makes us irrelevant. We're no longer choosing our representatives. The parties are choosing them for us. It's why for so many years, Utah is considered a flyover state. What does that mean? No president is coming to Utah because they know where our electoral votes are going to go. So it doesn't do us a service to be addicted to one party or the other. It hurts us. And it's not until the political parties know that they have to come back to us. Like, how would it be if every single election they had to go back to every voter and justify their existence and say, please, 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 will you support us again? Then representation would be alive and well. We would be choosing our representatives. Right now, we're choosing our parties, and the parties are choosing our representatives. That's not the way it was designed, and that's a perfect way to guarantee that we don't get what we want, what the majority wants, again, the majority being in the middle. It's a great way to guarantee that the extremes get what they want. I do think, David, that where you could have a huge impact is if you could get an independent to win in a state like Utah for Congress, especially if Congress gets much closer. Like, could you imagine an independent in Utah? I know, long shot, but dream with me here for a minute about making a difference. An independent in Utah would have the power to get things done from both sides. Because, again, if the vote gets closer, you could really have an impact, like you're seeing with Senator Manchin. You could really have an impact. So it's funny that you might think, well, we'll lose power if we support an independent. I think it might be just the other way around. That's the way to take power. I said that kind of like a dictator. That's the way to take power. And to demand change and to force the sides to work together. How would that be? You get a couple of independents, they're going to run the show. That's all it would take. Just a couple. That's all it would take. Chris and I are so often on the same page. Chris, I promise I didn't read your comment before I said what I just said. He says, I think people miss the fact that a third party member of Congress would have so much power in D.C. That's what, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So again, it's kind of like a Bug's Life. Are we going to realize that the majority are being dominated by the minority and the extremes? And are we going to rise up and take our country back before it's too late? I don't care how it happens. It can happen within the parties. It can happen outside. But I cannot be complicit in a party that is contributing to the destruction of our nation and the death of tens of thousands of people. I can't do that. I won't do that. So, regardless of what my choice is moving forward, I know for a fact that I cannot and will not support the Republican establishment as it is. And I lament the fact that that means that those people locally in that party that I support will not have my support. But I'll be honest with you, they should be screaming foul at the top of their lungs. So even though I would call them good, their silence is killing this nation and killing people. You should be screaming at the top of your lungs. And if you're not, then I consider it a political calculation. So, can't do it. I just can't do it any longer. So I really appreciate it. If you're just joining us, we had Jim Bennett on, one of the original founders of the United Utah Party and also mayoral candidate for Sandy. And I encourage you to go back and listen to our discussion. I know most of you on this program, I think you will really agree with the things that we talked about. And he gave me a lot to think about with the United Utah Party. And so go back and listen to it. And it'll be available on my YouTube and Facebook. And I always take our lives and I replay them the next day on Facebook and everything else. And then I also post them to the podcast as well. So there's some other ways for you to check in on that. Cyan joining us on the chat feature on jmcfarland.com says, "Hey, I left for similar reasons when Trump won the primary. I found a nice home in the United Utah Party." Oh, the word home sounds so good, doesn't it? To feel at home in a political party. That's a word I'd like to use in the future. It really is. I will remind you that I have been working with a group of like-minded individuals on a way to support candidates from all walks of life who choose not to engage in the character assassination and the toxicity that has led to so much of what we're experiencing right now. And we've created an organization called Lift Politics. We want to lift politics. And you can sign up for our newsletter and get involved at liftpolitics.org. That is, our numbers are growing and we need your help. We need your volunteer time. We need your effort to push that forward. That entity is not designed to push policy. It's designed to push behavior. And it asks the question, who are we to become in our battle for principles or for platforms? When you have good leadership, good leaders will define who you become in that fight. Because it's very important to define that. If you embrace all the tactics of those you consider to be your enemy, if you stoop to their level at every turn, then there is no difference between you and them. And we've talked about this before. If in your fight if your fight against racism, if in that fight you become a racist, then you've become what you hate. And we see that in so many social justice issues. So Lift Politics is about asking the question, who are we to become in the fight? If we just become those who we rail against, then what's it all for? So go to liftpolitics.org and check that out. And please get involved. I do have a lot of hope and faith in that organization, that if we can get enough numbers, that we can start encouraging people to be better in how they campaign and how they carry themselves. So I hope that you will check that out as well. In the meantime, I'm still looking for a home. Many of you are. I'm going to continue to share with you my thoughts about what the possibilities are, and I'm going to continue to ponder the question for now. What is the next step for me? Is it just focusing on Lift Politics? Is it another possible run? Perhaps as a member of another party, as an independent? I've got to do something, you know? And so many of you have been so good in your support of me. I just feel like we've got to channel that into something. We have to try. We have to try. I really believe that. With that, let's see how long we've been going. Wow, hour and a half. I thought for sure it was going to be like 45 minutes. Thank you for hanging out with me tonight. Thank you, as always, for your thoughtful commentary. Scott on Facebook says, "I would vote for you anywhere, Jay." Thank you so much, Scott. For some reason, green eggs and ham came to mind when you said that. Anywhere? I don't know why. but thank you. Thank you. If we can get enough of that, then, you know, a third party could be viable. or independent could be viable. But people are dying, and our nation is dying. Let's do a Bug's Life. Let's wake up the majority. You think we could do it? It'd be really cool if we could. That idea excites me a little bit. It really does. With that in mind, please take a minute, go to jmcfarland.com and join the club. You can come in for free, but it will really help me out if you can come in for $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever it is. And there are great benefits now if you do come in. It's not just you supporting me. I'm returning the favor. You get access to my books, my webinars, a lot of content that is just created just for the members. That will help me in the short term to continue to bring this content to you and to support my family as I'm trying to decide what the next steps are. And I feel like we're going to kind of decide together what that's going to be. And so it's going to be an interesting journey. That much I know for sure. With that, my friends, thank you for staying up with me again. Everybody have a wonderful night. And we'll see what happens over the next weeks and months. It's going to be interesting. Everybody, thanks again. Have a great night. This screen's supposed to change here. There we go.